You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the Kid Counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, I am answering questions from Terry in Ireland. Terry, thanks for emailing. And a couple of questions that came in from Terry and not really related, so we're going to kind of tease these apart as separate questions. So the first is, can you go into some more detail on enlargement, the when, the how, etc., and also self-esteem building responses? Should these techniques come at later stages? Basically, the more advanced techniques outside of basic reflective responding, tracking behavior, and reflecting content. All right. So thanks, Terry, for the email. I think that a really helpful rule of thumb is that we have our reflective responses, which are what? Pop quiz. Yes, thank you all. Reflect behavior, sorry, track behavior, reflect content, reflect feeling. Okay, so we have that. That's our standard. We use that at almost any moment in the playroom because it's always at our disposal. Then we have our four pillars, which are pop quiz, reflecting feelings, choice giving, limit setting, encouragement. Those are our standards. Those are considered the basics of CCPT. So when we think about what would we use consistently, no matter where we are in the process, it's going to be those two, as well as the Be With Attitudes, which are pop quiz. Thank you. I'm here. I hear you. I understand. I care and I delight in you. So we're always operationalizing Be With Attitudes through the use of the reflective responses and the pillars. So in light of the self-esteem building responses, that is essentially encouragement, Terry. So yes, self-esteem building responses are a little bit different because they tend to focus on what the child is actively doing, and encouragement is sometimes done at the end of something. But they are both to build the child's sense of capacity and capability, and they're used largely interchangeably most of the time. So you would absolutely do all of those things from the very first session all the way through the last. All of the reflective responses, all of the pillars, and operationalizing it with Be With Attitudes. Okay, as far as this enlargement, we want to think about the enlargement as a deeper part of the process and therefore later on in the process. In other words, a child's not going to be ready to go deeper when they haven't even gotten ready to do their work yet. They're not going to be ready to go deeper when they're still in resistance. They're not going to be ready to go deeper when they're still building a rapport and a relationship with you. Therefore, we typically reserve enlargements for later in the process, at the very least in the work phase. And there's a process to it. And essentially what we're doing is looking beyond the surface level and getting to the deeper meaning and the why behind what is happening. In other words, at any given moment, a child might be expressing a feeling, might be doing something, so a behavior of sorts, and or saying something, which in those scenarios, we use reflective responses. But that is still kind of high level. We're acknowledging an emotion, a conversation, or a behavior. But what about why the child is saying something? What about why the child is behaving in a certain way? Why the child is expressing a feeling? Now we're getting into enlargement. What is the deeper part of what's going on? That's what we're looking to do when we enlarge. So in that scenario, we would, and this happens really fast. In real time, this is a split second awareness. So something happens, we immediately interpret the why behind it, and we respond with an enlargement. So that might look something like, it's important to you to have everything the way you want it to be. Or, it feels good when you can control what happens in here. Now we're talking about deeper stuff. Because yes, I could say, you're ordering me around. That would be a tracking of behavior. I could say, you're telling me to get up and go over there. That would be a reflection of content. I could say, you're happy that you get to make me do what you want. Reflection of feeling. but it feels good to have all the control in here. Now we're at a much deeper level. We're not just scratching the surface of what's happening. So you do want to reserve those enlargements for later on in the process, and you have to assess the child's readiness. Some kids will not be ready to receive those. So it needs to be a very gradual and patient process where you wait until you think the child can receive it, then you throw out an enlargement, and then you gauge the child's readiness and reaction. And if you get a sense that it didn't settle or they weren't able to receive it, then you wait a little while before you try again. And you just default back to the pillars and the reflective responses in the meantime. So thanks for that question, Terry. And then the second question is it possible for a child to not move through the obvious stages of play? And if it is not clearly defined and you are somewhat confused, can you use changes in the relationship to mark progress and changes in how the child acts and talks? For example, not cleaning up anymore or not asking permission anymore as your guide rail, both for charting progress in the playroom and determining whether to begin termination. All right. Yes, it is possible for a child not to be obvious in their movement. We never expect nor need a child to make it clear, okay, we're in initiation, now we're in resistance, now we're in work, now we're ready to move into termination. Those are more of, I don't want to say philosophical, that's probably not an appropriate word, but they're more hypothetical, that's a better word. They're more hypothetical in nature. Yes, those phases exist, and yes, we can often determine what phase the child happens to be in at any given time. But they're kind of constructs that we use from our side of things, not necessarily that we need to see them for the child to be making progress. So there are often times when a child will go in a different order. They will bypass a phase and come back to it. They will go really quickly through two and then dive into the third and then have to backpedal. So it's never a 1, 2, 3, 4, and it's never as linear as we would like it to be. Sometimes we think that a child went through resistance, but we're not really sure. Sometimes we think a child has moved into work, and we're not really sure. It's really just kind of a child-by-child scenario where we're always evaluating what's happening. And to speak to your point, are we able to look at changes in the relationship to mark progress? Absolutely. We don't need to know which phase the child's in to see changes in the relationship. Can we use changes in how the child acts and talks? Absolutely. We're always looking for those shifts. If they don't clean up anymore, huge change. If they don't ask permission anymore, huge change. So we would absolutely document that as major shifts. And arguably, that means they're in work phase. If you're seeing those kinds of shifts, then they're absolutely in work. And we know at the beginning, they're going through the initiation and warm-up. We know that. So even if they go through it really quickly, they will likely continue to go through it. Even if they've moved on to a different phase, they will revisit the rapport and the trust and the bond. That's the premise of CCPT. The relationship is at the heart of all change. So they have to have an established relationship. We know they're going to go through that. We know every kid is going to deal with resistance in some way, but sometimes it's only at school. Sometimes it's only at home. Sometimes it's only in the playroom. There's no way to predict what that looks like. So sometimes we don't see it, and that's okay. And then determining whether or not to begin termination. There are four considerations that we want to look for before we decide whether or not we're ready to terminate. Pop quiz, what are they? This one might have been harder. I'm assuming you all yelled at me, but I don't know. Okay. So there are no new themes presenting consistently over sessions. We're seeing no new themes emerge. We see no shifts within existing themes. So whatever theme is present at that point in treatment, we don't see any shifts taking place. The presenting issues or original concerns have either reduced or have disappeared. And we see regulation across all environments. So if parents report that things are going well at home and at school and at church and at extracurriculars, you report that things are very stable and steady in the playroom. There are no new themes. There are no shifts within existing themes. And parents say that whatever reasons that they brought the child in for in the first place have improved, then we know that we're ready to move into termination. But quite honestly, all the things that you described, Terry, as far as not cleaning up anymore, not asking permission anymore, changes in the way the child acts and talks, those are the indications that you would be able to tell the parents that you feel like things have been improving and changing in the playroom. So it's very much collaborative. We want parents to weigh in, and we want to weigh in, and we want to make sure that everyone is on board, that we're ready to start that termination phase. So thank you so much for the email. I really appreciate it, and I hope that that's helpful for each and every one of you. One of the things that I love is when I get stories from playrooms. So I would like to end with sharing an email from Krista. And Krista emailed and said that she has been listening in Kentucky. So hello to all of those of you in Kentucky. I have quite a few friends actually that are huge Wildcat fans. Like, they drive blue cars and have all things blue for the Wildcats. So I know how your fandom is around there. So it's nice to have you, Krista. Thank you. So let me read a little bit of her email. She gave me permission to share this with you. And I hope that this really encourages you, because these are the outcomes of the time and energy that you are investing in training and listening and growing in CCPT. Every minute that you spend listening to this podcast, it is your investment in your practice of CCPT. And she shared a story of how it impacted her practice, and I was given permission to share it with you. I hope this email finds you well. I'm at a private practice in Kentucky. I'm still relatively new to play therapy, but I was introduced to it during my internship. And to be honest, I felt completely out of my depth at the time. While my supervision was helpful, I struggled to connect with the approach until a friend recommended your podcast. Listening to your episodes was a game changer for me. It helped play therapy click in a way that supervision alone hadn't. Your insights not only deepened my understanding, but also helped me fall in love with the process. And it has allowed me to embrace working with younger children in a way that I hadn't expected. That's so exciting. Okay, so here's the story. This week, I had a session that reminded me of the episode where you described a client who completely destroyed your playroom. During my session, my young client was overwhelmed with big emotions, throwing toys, screaming, spitting, and kicking. I found myself drawing on your words and experiences, which helped me stay calm, centered, and fully present. And like your client, mine eventually calmed down, chose to build with blocks, and even cared for me with the doctor toys. It turned into a really meaningful session, and I couldn't help but think of how your story had prepared me for that moment. So that is always my hope, and I'm so thrilled when I get stories like that, because you have to be prepared for the unknown, and things are easier when they don't catch us off guard. So every single podcast that you listen to, it is equipping you for something that might occur in the future, and you will feel better prepared, you will feel more confident, you will feel more capable, and you will fall back on what you've heard and what you've learned and what you've gained from the work that you're putting in. So Krista, thanks so much for that email and for letting me share that. To all of you, every single time you walk into a playroom, it's an opportunity to fall in love all over again with what we do. And it's easy to get caught up in the skills and the knowledge and the training and all kinds of things. But the reality is, every single hour, it's a gift to us to be in that room with that child and have the honor of being included in their healing journey. So every single time, it's an opportunity to fall back in love with why you are all in on CCPT, which is, if we are CCPT, it's just a matter of being. You just be with the child, and magical things happen. So love y'all. We'll talk again soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.